Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
October 30th, 2015, you're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, coming to you from the future.
I was going to say happy Halloween, buddy.
Oh, happy Halloween.
So in this future universe, what are you going as?
Ramsey, because we're on our cruise right now. Uh-huh. Actually, we're not, but we're recording it.
Right.
So you can pretend I'm on the cruise, right? So Ramsey ordered us those tuxedo t-shirts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, because we're going to be on the cruise for 18 nights, so we're not packing formal stuff because, you know, we got to have room for real clothes, right?
Right, right.
So we're probably going to wear those and go as douches.
Well, that tops me. I was going as a slutty nurse, so I guess you win.
Oh man. But we're recording for the future, which is funny because today is the day after the Back to the Future Day, right?
Yeah. I'm so over that now, I gotta tell you. It's everywhere.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting is I got my USA Today this morning, and they actually did a wraparound with that cover.
Geez.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm just tired of hearing about it.
Yeah. But anyhow, so we're recording early because I am at sea right now, and we didn't want you guys to go without a show next week. So obviously this means that a whole lot of awesome stuff happened since the last week.
Right.
That we're not going to be able to talk about until next week on the cruise. Because next week we'll be doing our show on the ship, as always. So, but remember that you can join us in our future cruises out of Los Angeles, Port Canaveral, Seattle, or Tampa next year. Get all the information at anteupcruises.com, and you can be part of the show that we will be recording. And it'll be late next week, obviously, because we get off to... Well, actually, it really won't be that late, right?
What time we got from Friday?
Thursday.
So, all right.
Post good. We won't have mass hysteria in the end.
Yeah, no, we'll post it Friday morning or something, but we'll be good.
But it'll be our shortened cruise show. Although, I've got an idea to add a little heft to it. And it has to do with this next item that we're going to talk about. Martin Shapiro, who's been active in the Poker Players Alliance of Florida and has written his online poker bill that he's trying to get passed here in Florida, he will actually be a guest on our cruise next week.
Oh, wow.
Tampa cruise.
Wow.
And so maybe we'll be able to, grab him and talk to him a little bit more about this while he's on the ship and make that show a little beefier next week as well, too. But we definitely want to talk about it this week. He was recently interviewed by PokerFuse about his efforts to get online poker regulated in our fair state down here. And he listed, obviously, the obstacles that happen in lots of places. Lawmakers, Disney, which actually only happens here, right?
Yeah.
Fair Mutuals, Sheldon Adelson. But surprisingly to some, maybe, he said the biggest obstacle, players themselves.
Yeah.
He essentially says that there are so many poker players here in Florida, and if only a fraction of them would join his Twitter and Facebook and writing their their lawmakers, the effort that he's doing, it would make a huge difference, but he's having trouble getting poker players to go along.
You know, by the way, Martin's played in a couple of our home games.
Yep.
He's local to us, and he's so passionate about poker. It's really...
one of the most passionate
people. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty remarkable, and it's nice to have somebody like that pushing for us. And there are some things in this... I read the story, or the interview, and there are some things in there that I agree with, some I don't. I agree that... if you got something has to get done, you have to have the people behind you, and that's 100% true. I mean, unless you know you got money behind you, that obviously will do it too. And we don't really have that. I think the Disney thing is probably pushing it a little bit. It'd be one thing for brick and mortar in that area. We've written that story before, wrote that years ago. But yeah, I can see where, you know, players need to get more involved and showing support in numbers like that by supporting social media and their his agenda there and saying, okay, I think I think it was like 100,000 people at one. He said that there's probably 100,000 people who've played online poker in Florida.
Right. Yeah.
So, do I think 100,000 votes is a lot in a state that's got, what, 7 million people or something like that? How many we got in there? No, we got more than that. What do we have, 40 million?
I think way more than that.
Yeah, it's like four. I'm trying to remember the elections when it was the split down the middle.
I actually don't know, but I know it's way more than 7
million. Yeah, it's like 40 million people or something, or even more. Do I think 100,000 votes is going to make
somebody... I don't think it's more about votes. I think it's more getting the word out to the lawmakers that showing that, you know, that there is interest in it. That's, I think that's what he's getting at. Right? I don't think it's ever going to go on the ballot.
Yeah.
Could be wrong, but I think it's more about getting it, getting interest there, getting the bill out of a committee, which has always been the problem. They've always been able to get a lawmaker to submit a bill almost every session.
Right.
It's getting it out of committee that's always been the problem. And then once you get out of committee, obviously, then it's got to, you know, get hearings, and it's got to get a companion bill in the other house, and then actually make it to the floor of either one. So it's a pretty daunting task to get something passed, really in any state, and certainly here in Florida. So,
but let me ask you this: is it really numbers that would have that happen, or is it just getting one person,
you know,
in that place?
Question. That's a good question, because I've always wondered about this. That, I mean, I try to put myself in the shoes of a lawmaker, right? If I'm a representative, Scott Long, D. Safety Harbor, and all of a sudden I'm getting a bunch of form letters from a bunch of people. I gotta be honest, I'm not gonna take that into account, I don't think. Right? If I'm getting handwritten notes or personal, hey, you know, my mom is struggling with the healthcare system here, that means something to me, I think.
Right.
But if I'm getting a bunch of form letters or tweets or things like that, I know that's a political operation going on, right? And that doesn't mean I'm gonna discount it necessarily, because, you know, it could be something of value. But I'm not as much moved by that as I am by a, you know, genuine interest.
Right.
Well, so it's interesting you asked that, because I've been thinking since I read this, and I'm like, you know, I wonder why we're not more involved in this, or why I'm not more involved personally in this. Obviously, I'd love to play online poker, right? And I think that's what I kind of decided, is just that this approach doesn't fit for me personally and how I like to do things. It may be effective. It may be the way to go. I'm not criticizing it. I'm not saying you should stop. It's just not, I don't feel comfortable retweeting and tweeting and a bunch of lawmakers that I know don't care.
Right.
And I don't have a better idea, I guess, but this just isn't my speed.
Well, you know, it's also, to me, I think the most important way to get this sort of attention is, one, it has to be a viable plan. The viability of why would we want to step up to the plate and go to bat for online poker as a, not me and you, but as in a politician.
Right.
So it has to be something that makes total sense to that politician, and then you got to find the right politician. The amount of numbers behind it then comes into play. Then you say, look, this is a viable plan because we have 100,000 people who will play online and generate revenue for this state, and this is the kind of money they'll generate. And then you get someone who's bright like Martin, who can say to them, here's how it's not the same as playing roulette online. Here's why it's the equivalent of a skill-based thing, and why it's not this terrible backroom, you know, cliche that everyone tries to make it out to be. And then you convince some politician who now gets it. That person says, okay, look, guys, I can find money for our state. And then uses that as a platform or something. And then, you know, whatever. To me, it's finding that person is more important than the numbers. I mean, if we were all behind something that was absolutely detrimental to society, they're not going to do anything for us if it's horrible. Right. But you have to convince one person that it's not horrible and that it can actually be a total positive. And then that person can go to his people and convince them because he speaks their language. And then they all get behind it. But to me, to just say, you know, Disney and Parimutuels and Sheldon Adelson, to me, that's not really the reason that we're not getting it here. And I don't think it's necessarily that there's not enough people stepping up to the plate wanting it either. It could be. I mean, he's convinced me of other things when I've talked to him. So he could probably, I hope he does talk to us about it on the show next week or 2 weeks or whatever. So I don't know. I'm with both sides of the argument. It's just, to me, I really feel like we have to talk to we have to have one person go and talk to all of these people who represent us and say, all right, is this something that you think you and I can work with? And then when he understands it, you got to find somebody who loves poker, who's played poker with their father, their grandfather, their grandmother, and understands that the game is part of our fabric.
I'll say this, is we have that already. We have a rep that keeps pushing these bills. So you have the one. The one's not the problem. I think the problem is getting, you know, then attacking that committee and getting out of committee. So it's a process, right? So I think you're right. We found the handful of people that probably will support this, that will file the bill. That's the first step. Then I think the next strategy is going after understanding how the process works and what committee it's going to be in, and going after those folks. Now, once you get it out of committee, then at that point, then this kind of thing that we're talking about here is where it starts to maybe have some effect, you know, where lawmakers that have nothing to do with the gaming oversight committee or whatever now have to consider this
one way or
the other. Right. Now that's when you go, oh, okay, I got 190 emails today about it. Okay, well, maybe it's worth me looking at, or at least let's see what they say. So it's a process, and I think that's it. So, you know, I'm not really necessarily picking apart at what his plan is here too. I just think it's too big for right now for what it is.
Yeah.
Now, and then also, you know, I was thinking, you know, obviously we're in a really delicate gaming climate here in Florida right now. We're in the middle of renegotiating the Seminole Compact. As part of that, there's a lot of other discussions going on with what, if anything, the paramutuals might get. So in one sense, gaming is forefront coming up in this next session in January. So that's a good time to bring up this other stuff. The other thing, though, the flip side of it is that you've got such these people that are like, hey, we got to limit gaming whatever we can. We got to deal with this issue, but we got to limit it. So at that point, I'm wondering whether online poker is just asking for too much at that point. Maybe it's ahead of its time. Maybe we need to get this other thing settled and then go back later and say, all right, see, this all worked out. Let's add this thing. But the new wrinkle is, and this is probably the 12th show in a row we've talked about daily fantasy sports, but there has been a lot of discussion from Florida lawmakers that they have to address daily fantasy sports this next session.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be part of the discussion too. And now if that's part of the discussion, then I think you have to have online poker as part of that discussion, right? Because now it's all the same thing. It's all online. It's different sports versus poker.
Right.
But now it's all part of that same conversation. So that's what makes this thing so difficult, I think, for everyone. You know, it on one hand, you can say the timing is not right. On the other side, you can say the timing is perfect right now. And yeah. I don't know which one it is. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm happy Martin's out there doing it, and we'll certainly be keeping track of it, and there seems an opportunity where we feel like we can make a meaningful contribution to it. I'm happy to. But I don't necessarily think it's that players themselves are not interested. I mean, part of it, you have to get players interested in it, right?
Right. Yep. And that's the other thing, too, is that it's like, which chicken or the egg?
Right.
You know, which is first? And I think the approach is that you take all facets into perspective, because if you're going to have someone that you're trying to lean on in Congress or whatever in the government that you want to lead your fight, that's perfect that you got somebody. But then he's got to know that the numbers are there, so that he's got the, not the mandate, because that's not the right number, but the word, I mean, but the amount of, he's got to know he's got the numbers behind it, so that when he goes to his fellow, you know, people, he's going to be like, hey, look at this, you know, and I'll explain it to you in terms you can understand, but look at this, and we need to realize that this is an opportunity for everyone to be happy and to make money, and then that's how you move forward. So you got to get, so as long as you're accepting anything that's positive in this fight, you know, I think you're building up a resume that you can go to bat with. And so I agree with him that we need people behind it, obviously. We need money. We need people. But I don't think that's the main reason. But I can't wait to see what he has to say about it next week. You know, hopefully you'll get him on the show and talk to him a little bit about it and you know, and get down to the bottom of it, see what we can do.
I'm pausing here because I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I'm going to let you...
Okay, all right, Olivier Bousquet and J.C. Alvarado. How's that?
All right, that's what I want to say. They have agreed on a prop bet to battle each other in a mixed martial arts bout in April. Alvarado, who has some MMA experience, and I'm doing air quotes because the story actually had quotes around experience. I don't know what that is. gets $120,000 if he wins, and Bousquet, described as a quote physical beast, gets $150,000 if he wins. So before we get to that, I like the fact that there's a different payout, right?
Yeah.
So they know, hey, Alvarado is probably the favorite, so he's going to get a little bit less if he wins. And so it made me think of the race for the Hyundai.
Oh, jeez.
And I think you took advantage of Faso now. Now that I know this, because clearly I think everybody went in there thinking that you were going to win. You were the favorite. Mm-hmm. But you guys had the same odds. I think you owe him $20.
Oh, man.
You should have always taken 80. He could have got 120. That's what I think.
All right, well, hang on. If I was the one that proposed the bet, I might agree to that. But I'm there minding my own business, working at the Times, and I get a message from him, you know, saying that he's exercising or something. Or no, it was something. And I'm like, well, that's because you're middle-aged. And then he was like, I'm not middle-aged. I'm like, the very definition in Webster's Dictionary is your age is middle-aged. I mean, what do you want me to say? I'm not making fun of you. I'm just stating a fact. Like, you're Italian. You know what I mean? What? So then he's like, I could beat you in a race. And I'm like, calm your jets, dude. I'm just, you know. So I didn't propose any of that. I'm not going to give someone odds who is proposing something against me. It'd be me if I'm trying to get him to race me.
He made a mistake.
Yeah, he did. I didn't. I'm not stupid.
Like, hey, you're in a much better shape. I'm not so much. And now you probably wouldn't take in those odds, but, you know. All I'm saying is it's an interesting way of doing a prop.
It is. And it reminds me of baseball games where you have to bet
exactly
110 to win 100.
Right.
Or whatever. But, yeah, I wonder who made. See, I didn't. I don't know. Hey, there's no way I would have given him 120 against my 100.
I know you wouldn't have, but.
But. And the other thing, too, is he was already running and getting in the shape before I even started.
Doing whatever that thing was that he called running.
Yeah.
It was the most embarrassing race I've ever seen in my life.
It was embarrassing. But, you know, it was fun because I stopped to let him catch up to me so I could talk to him a little bit, see how he was doing.
You walked during it, and he was running like he was riding a bicycle. It was hilarious. Quite possibly this mixed martial arts as MMA bout is going to be equally as hilarious.
Arm bar! Arm bar! Arm bar! That's the two we're going to be yelling. I still remember the first time I met Olivier Bousquet. It was in... I didn't meet him. I sort of met him. I was talking to someone else. I think I was interviewing Brunson or something, because later on, it was at Foxwoods. It was like the last time I was at Foxwoods and for the PokerCast, and they were having dinner together, all three. It was him, Doyle, and Jennifer Harmon, I think. They were having dinner in some restaurant right against the glass window, and I'm just like, this is so surreal. I'm walking around, and there are three you know, poker pros having dinner next to me or whatever. It was so surreal, but I think the guy who's favored to win is going to win.
April, though. I mean, here's the thing. Poker players have shown that they
to lose weight,
really,
not to become a great fighter.
Some really crazy stuff if given enough time and enough money.
Yeah, they can lose weight, but I don't think they can learn how to beat up on somebody who's...
Well, he says this guy's a physical beast. I actually have only seen him sitting down at the table, so I don't know whether he's really a beast.
Yeah, I don't know about him being a beast either.
But, you know, if you could start from somewhere. I mean, let's say... I'm not going to, you know, bet JC here. I mean, I'm not starting with anything, right?
Right.
So, even though I've got, what, 6 months to get in the MMM shape, it ain't going to happen, right?
Yeah, no.
But if I was already, you know, cross-fitting the hell out of life, I think 6 months I could learn how to kick and punch and whatever, ass slap or whatever these guys do.
Arm bar. Tap out, tap out.
Yeah. I think what would really raise the stakes here is the winner gets the money, but then has to fight Ronda Rousey.
Yes. And put up that money.
Right.
Yes, that'd be awesome. So
that's the epitome of you can't win. You can win, you get the money, and then you're just going to get your ass kicked.
Get your ass kicked anyway.
Yeah.
So are you saying, like, I should have, you know, raced against somebody after
Same
I beat? Yeah. I should have raced you, right? Because you're like, I could have run that drunk faster than that, you said, or something.
You know,
like
I actually thought that day, and I didn't want to spoil the moment, but I actually thought I was going to let you guys start, and then I was going to jump in the race.
Yeah. That would have been awesome.
I might not have been able to do it, but then I get out there and I'm like, I don't feel like running today. It's too funny to watch.
So. I totally wrecked his mind, too. I came out of the gate running so fast that I totally blew his whole plan. He tried to catch up with me like a moron, and that was it. It was over. He had no chance after that. All right, any updates? The schedule, structures, and other details for the 4th annual Antiup NorCal Classic Antiup Poker Tour event at Thunder Valley Casino Resort near Sacramento, California, November 21st to 29th, has been posted. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on the cover of Antiup Magazine at antiupmagazine.com/Thunder Valley. And don't forget, we've migrated our Antiup group discussions to PokerRadius.com, a great poker networking site. Basic memberships are free and get you access to the Antiup forums, and upgraded memberships get you access to discounts on poker products and automatic entries to contests. Don't forget, those are pretty cool things. Starting to pick up again on Poker Radius.
Yeah, we're having lots of good conversations.
Yeah, so it's going well. All right, at Listener Spotlight, each week we spotlight someone who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. Antiup listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. Comes from Brian Sachs. Says, I am sickened when I see someone eating at my table. I know most places don't allow this type of behavior, but when you have a player successfully eat from under the table, are you permitted to raise that concern to the player or the dealer? I'm guessing they would get warned, but I see people do it all the time and nobody ever says anything. It's almost like nobody cares. I care, though. I care when your wet hands and barbecue sauce get on chips that I may end up winning. It's quite frustrating in thinking, and he's thinking other players experience the same. Thanks for listening.
Well, first of all, I appreciate Brian posting this at PokerRadius.com. He's one of the folks that are getting that thing kickstarted for us. Appreciate
it. Right.
I responded on PokerRadius.com. We had a good conversation back and forth, so definitely check that out. The first thing I thought about when I read this is, Faso is like being a star these last couple of shows, right?
Yeah.
Bringing back all these memories. When we first went to California on one of our trips, and I saw the little tables and the little waiters that came over and brought you food right to the table, and I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And not to mention that the food was great and cheap too. I mean, it was the best thing ever, right? So I go back and I was talking to some of the Florida rooms, and dining at the table hadn't made it to Florida yet, you know. And I was talking to one of the managers, and he's like, yeah, I guess I could see that, but we're probably going to limit what they can eat. You know, we're not going to give them chicken wings, because can you imagine them, like, you know, rubbing barbecue sauce all over the cards and the cards sticking together? And I was laughing, but now everywhere I go, you can get chicken wings.
Yeah.
So it's really just, people are just like, forget it, whatever, eat at the table. But I guess the overall answer is, this is actually the first time I've heard somebody get this worked up about being grossed out by it. And I'm not trying to make them feel bad. I can see it. You know, let's be honest. Poker players are not the best representatives of our community in general, how they act, right?
Right.
So that just translates to just how disgusting they eat. I've seen some really gross eating at table, right? So I get it. But from a business standpoint, I think the whole tableside dining thing has been a good thing for poker rooms, because one, not only do they make the revenue off the food that they're selling to you, but they're keeping your butt in the seat, right?
Right.
And keeping games going. And so I guess that's what I would probably suggest to Brian is I don't think this is going to go away. It doesn't mean that you can't say to someone, my God, you're being disgusting.
Get a wet nap.
Yeah. Can you use a napkin, please, at least?
Yeah.
Chew with your mouth shut. Do all that, but it's not going to go away. So what I think you need to look for the bright spot right here, and what I'm saying is the bright spot is without that fat ass eating at the table, your game might break and you might not be able to play poker.
Right.
So let them eat. Just be honest. Just tell them, eat better.
There's always a silver lining.
Right.
I remember when was it Tiffany Michelle got all that crap for the French fries?
French fries, right?
Yeah. I was like, oh my, this, people just have too much time on their hands. They have to complain about something. Not saying that Brian is that, but I'm just saying sometimes things get out of hand for no reason.
I mean, it is gross. I mean, you know, I've seen grosser people eat than Tiffany Michelle. But, you know, I get it. Again, I get it. And, but, you know, it's one of these things. I mean, we have how many of these issues do we have in poker now? We got, you know, headphones, we got
cell phones,
texting, all these things that annoy the hell out of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the answer can't be to ban them all, because that just drives people away and people don't want it. So really, it's just going back to reminding the golden rule, you know, treat people the way you want. So, you know, if you don't want people, you know, gagging up chicken bones at the table when you're playing poker, then don't gag up chicken bones at the table when you're doing it, right?
Right.
Or, you know, so, and, but I think there's also reality check, the world's become a ruder place. It's just the way it is, right? So people are going to be rude. So at some point, you're just going to accept a certain level of rudeness, because that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's accepted
all. Just like anything else. You go to the movie theaters, there's texting, there's right. talking, there's coughing, there's standing up in front of you, there's eating next to you. I mean,
there's people that can afford a movie ticket but can't afford a babysitter.
Exactly.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. So, I mean, no matter what walks of life, anytime that you're going to be doing something in the public eye or in a public fashion, you're going to deal with these kind of problems. So, you know, it's smarter to do that than, you know, than to just become a hermit. You know? I mean, you want to enjoy poker, you're going to have to look past the tedious things like that.
But this is what's great about poker raids. It allows people to rage and vent, right?
That's right.
So I hope Brian feels good just getting it off his chest. I wish instead of one hand at a time, which is a great prize for him, we should probably just send him a bunch of wet naps, right? Pass not here. You're disgusting.
All right, find yourself
up before you check raise me.
Are you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Randy-san Smith. Love those movies. He says, I was in a horse tournament in a Northern California room during the Omaha 8 rotation. Two of us at Showdown. I had 3-5-XX for a... I never had a carbon X on it. What is that?
Yeah.
Canadian? I don't know what that is. For a 6 high straight and a 6 low. The other player showed 4-4-5-5 with no low, and he declared he had trips. Dealer pushes me the pot and mucks the cards, at which time another player says, wait, the 4-4-5-5 hand had a diamond flush. The dealer tries to go back into the muck to recreate the hand, but to no avail. I've stacked most of the chips that were pushed to me by the time the four arrives. The four attempts to recreate the action. I told him I doubted this was the correct amounts for the action. Nonetheless, he then tells me to give him chips amounting to the entire pot, takes the chips, tells us to continue playing, then departs to review the video. Several players are upset that the clock and play continue to run at other tables. When the four returns, he declares there was a flush and hands the entire pot over to the other player. I ask him to please give me my half of the pot, and he does. I have several issues with how this was handled. One, if you are going to look at the video, why not use that to reconstruct the action? I do not think he accurately determined the proper pot size. Two, why take all of the pot from me while you figure it out? No one disputed that I had won the low hand, and I was forced to play with fewer chips while we waited for him to come back. What would have happened if I had gone all in before he returned? Do those chips that are coming to me play in that hand? This was not fair to all the players at the table, as we missed probably 15 minutes of the 25-minute level. How should this have been handled?
Wow, I don't want to be Elliot here. What a mess, right? All right, Elliot says, this type of situation will come up most often in Omaha 8 events and mixed game events where the reading of hands becomes much less routine and much more difficult. Lucky you, you were in the wheelhouse for incorrectly read hands. Generally, when a situation arises that leads to a surveillance review, the chips in dispute are removed from the table and held until a final determination is made. the chips in dispute here would only be half the pot that was waiting for a high hand to finally be determined. In cash games, play continues during surveillance call with little effect since players can add chips at will between hands. Since every chip in play and every hand dealt is very important in a tournament setting, a surveillance call should lead to a hopefully brief clock stoppage. The rearranging of the scheduled breaks could be handy in this spot. Your reasoning about fairness for the players at your table and the other tables is spot on. As for recreating the action, this is best left to the dealer and the players in the pot and at the table. The surveillance footage can supplement the information from the participants about the betting, but should not be the sole source of information used to calculate the size of the pot. Surveillance calls and reviews are not specifically addressed by the TDA in its rules and recommended procedures. This topic may be discussed at the next gathering, but I would imagine that operators of events that have large amounts of players and tables would not be in favor of stopping the clock for any reason. That last point's a good point, right? What if you're in a World Series event with 100 tables? You can't stop the clock for one. Those other 99 tables just because one idiot at this table misread his hand, right?
But it's the equivalent of pushing a button. I mean, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here.
No, it's not that it's hard to do it. What I'm saying is now you just added 10, 15 minutes to the tournament.
Who gets hurt by that?
Well, one, the operators, because now you're adding extra time to the tournament that they're operating. You've got players. Maybe players want to be home to watch Matlock, and now you just got to get home 15 minutes late for it.
Yeah, that's a weak argument. Both of those are weak. I mean, for me to say that 9-10 players are being screwed instead of the tournament stopping for 15 minutes, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that.
I haven't seen any surveillance reviews take 15 minutes. So, I mean, this one might have been pretty quick. Sometimes it's very long. And particularly if you're talking about reconstituting the pot, which I agree with Elliot, that's very hard. I mean, I haven't spent a lot of time looking at surveillance videos, but it's not all that easy to recreate a pot there. I mean, obviously, you could see the action of the cards and know what happened, which is what it's doing. But they actually see the bets and stuff. That's a little more difficult. It depends on the security level of security cameras you have. But I guess the point is that for any reason. So, you know, we're talking about one. I think you're thinking of it in a vacuum, right? We're thinking of this one situation. Why shouldn't we just stop the clock for everyone for 10 minutes? But if this happens at every table throughout the tournament, and Omaha 8, it's going to happen, now you're adding an hour, 2 hours to the tournament. Downtime.
Yeah.
I would think it's kind of like the whole situation we had with the getting moved into the blinds and stuff, right? People are like, oh, it sucks I got moved into the blinds. I'm like, but tournament director would say, you know, hey, it's going to work out in the end. You know, there's going to be somebody else later on that's going to get moved into a blind. It's all going to average out at some point. Maybe not in this tournament, but in your poker career, it's all going to average out. So I would argue this as well, too. So every time that you're at a table where there's a dispute like this, you're going to be at a table later on that has no disputes and get a lot more hands in. So it works out.
Think this happens a lot, where the guy gets the whole pot after they muck the cards and can't recreate the hand, they got to call a full over and then determine that he did have the hand they said and go to the sky?
I wouldn't say this. I would say, calling the floor over. So, I mean, here's the thing. It's probably a slippery slope, right? And some people might say sky to being ridiculous, but why would... If I'm at a table not in this hand, right, and I see the floor come over and they stop the clock, and the next hand the floor comes over, not necessarily for a surveillance thing, but for any reason, why would I not ask him to stop the clock? Would I not be justified in saying, hey, you stopped the clock with that floor call? Because you're still being delayed, right?
Well,
that's kind of the situation, I think, is you can't stop the clock every time a floor gets called over for anything.
No, you no. But if there's something, when there is a threshold that we set for something like this, though, and that threshold is when someone needs to go to surveillance, that's when the clock stops. Not just anybody walking
not
over.
Not necessarily arguing. And Elliot even said, you know, hey, this is where, as a good tournament director, you rearrange the breaks or something to make it all work out.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, in your situation at the World Series several years ago, it was easy because you guys were on a break.
Right. So this delayed it 20 minutes.
Just said, hey, you know, we haven't started yet. We're just going to hold off. That's a little different story than, you know, I'm in the middle. I'm in a groove. I'm just winning every pot left and right. All of a sudden, hey, 20-minute stoppage.
Yeah.
Smoke them if you got them.
Yeah.
That's a little different story. That's the smallest part of all this, I think.
Yeah.
The misreading of the hands. And it's Omaha. And this is one thing. I love Omaha, but I hate it because Omaha has 11 dealers at every table.
Yeah.
It is. And I'm so tired of players screaming out, he's got the low, he's got the high. Come on, dealer, just split it up. All right. Now, sometimes it's because the dealer just doesn't get it. And I really wish the dealers would get better training on Omaha and feel confident sitting down and understanding. But there's lots of times there are dealers that will be honest and say, hey, I don't deal this game very often. Let me figure it out on my own. I promise you it's going to get done. And players give them crap about it. And I hate that.
Yeah.
You know, let the dealer do his or her job, even if it takes a little bit longer, because how many times have you been barking, it's obvious, half pot here, and then somebody else goes, no, he actually has a low two. Oh, I didn't see that, I'm sorry. Yeah. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. So just shut up, slow down, and let the dealer do the job, and everybody pay attention, everybody shut up, and they start to move the pot the wrong way, then speak up and say, whoa, hey, two lows over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this was probably too quick, and I don't know if it was the dealer just trying to be too quick or if the player's not caring. Obviously, some player realized it, right?
Yeah, because and the other thing, too, is you can't just rely on what the people say to you. When he said trips...
Gosh, definitely not.
You know, the dealer needs to say, hold on, this is Omaha. Some weird hands can be made here that you don't realize you have. Let me just make sure look at the cards.
Right?
Yeah, cards speak, baby.
You have trips, and then you have no idea that you hit a flush because you weren't looking for it.
Yeah, you weren't looking for that at all. You hit your trips in the beginning, and that's what you were focused on. You're hoping hit the boat, don't even realize... that you've backed into a flush, that wins half the pot for you anyway.
Right.
All right, well, this is usually the time of the show when we go to O'Malley. We're giving him a couple of weeks off. Scott's
we got a vacation, so...
Yeah, Scott's got a vacation, so he is he, and then we'll get a vacation when I get back, so look for him in a couple of weeks.
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site, and home of the Antiup group discussions. This comes from across the pond, Jeff Drew from the UK. And he's like, I'm from Pontypridd in the UK. He says, good luck with that. Pronounced Pontypreath.
Wow.
Why?
Pontypreath.
You know, all right, here's the thing. You know, people make jokes when we say, hey, speak American here, because it's English, right?
Right.
But no, it's American. We've taken the best parts of English and made it better.
Okay.
Because there's a city over there that should be Edinburgh.
And it's Edinburgh?
Right. It doesn't look anything like that. How did you even get that out of that? So this is spelled P-O-N-T-Y-P-R-I-D-D. And it's Pontypreath.
I don't know.
I don't even have a fighting chance with this. I mean, I'm Anglo-American words. There's no way I have this English in me.
I want to see that word given to the kids in the spelling bee. Your word is Pontypreath. Can I have an alternative spelling? No.
Can you use it in a sentence? It's not even worth it, dude. You're just going to screw it up. Just sit down.
Just sit down. You're out. I had a long vendetta against you and your family. I gave you Pontypreath. You're gone.
Oh, I love it. Oh, man. all right, so he says, I love the show. I came across it about 2 years ago and have been an avid listener since. Probably this is last week now that we made fun of Pontypreath. I'm also working my way through all the available shows and looking forward to podcasts each week. Oh, shucks. We appreciate it. In my mind, one of you is the clever one, who reminds me of myself, and one is the funny one, who I'd like to have as a mate. I'll let you work out which is which.
I'm neither of those. So
I took care of this right away and wrote him back and said, I'm both. So.
That's right. You're both. I'm neither.
All right. So he says, I especially like the Hand of the Week, call the 4-0 Bally's Move, which I've learned so much from you guys. Sincere thanks. I'm a little worried about that because no one learns anything from us.
Yeah.
Or should. Here's his hand. It's from an 888 Snap Table. Now, 888 is obviously an online site that we only have here in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And Snap Table is their version of Speed Poker.
Okay.
Which was PokerStars' version of Full Tilt's Rush Poker, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder how many words we can run, go through, until somebody has to come up with the same one again, right?
Lightning.
Lightning Poker.
That was easy.
Oh, man. Justin Bieber's career poker.
Oh, man.
All right. So it's a quarter of 50 cents. He says, I spent a lot of time in the 15, 30 cents regular make squiggly $10 per hour. And I like the fact that he said $10.
Yeah.
I feel bad about this because I'm probably making him feel like he has to translate pounds into dollars for me because I'm an ugly American. I don't know how to do it. But that's exactly what I'm doing, right?
Right.
So he went ahead and said $10. Or maybe it's just 10 pounds he doesn't want to confuse.
Yeah, he's not using that little fancy L to throw you off.
So essentially we're saying he's playing above what he normally does, right?
All
right. He says, I regularly lose a lot of that in the 25-50 room, but I'm keen to move with a little, so I keep trying. All right, so we give him credit for trying, but obviously he knows he's a little bit over his head. All right, seven hands into the session, and he's like, I don't really know any of the players. I have copious notes on the players of the other game he plays in. I've already seen the player on the button three times. Marker's a fish as she limps every hand. Maximum buy him is $50. And let's see. All right, so... Oh, boy, it's a little hand converter here, so...
Oh, man, it's going to be hairy.
All right, so we are in the small blind.
Okay.
And let's see. All right.
What do we have? We have a hand? How much money do we have?
We do have a hand. Let's see how much money we have here. We have 104.54 big blinds.
Wow.
So it's done by big blinds rather than that.
Wow.
Deep, though, right?
Right.
Okay, so we got a couple folds. The button calls, and we are in the small blind with king of diamonds, king of clubs.
All right, so big blind is 50 cents, so we have like $52 is what that means. That's not really that big of a deal.
Right.
Basically, it's pretty early in the session.
But you got to translate that back into pounds.
All right, so it's $52, so it's really 12 pounds or something. So we have king. That's great.
Yep.
One
call or nobody else.
So, okay, so... Sometimes I like to trap like this, you know what I mean? You know, we want to give the guy, you know, the indication that you're just checking behind, you know, because you're in the big blind, you don't have a hand. Let him hit top pair, which is like a 10 or something, but he played jack 10, and then come alive later. So sometimes I like to do that. Just really, it's only you and the guy, right? It's only...
Well, you got the big blind. We're in the small blind.
Small blind, yeah. So I don't know. Sometimes I don't mind limping along with this, just to have some fun with it. Generally, I would raise just because I just want to be heads up all the time if I can be. But I'm an advocate for both. I might trap with this hand. Maybe we'll just call and see what happens. Let's play it differently this week.
All right. See, this is the difference between this week and last week. Last week was ace king, which I think is a weaker hand.
Yeah.
You need some help. Now we've got a made hand. Kings are going to be pretty good on a lot of boards here, especially if it's three-handed, which is the most it can be here. So I'm definitely going to raise here because I'm confident in betting out on that flop, whatever it is, even if it's an ace. Whereas with the ace-king, I feel a lot less confident.
Yeah.
And I guess it depends on whatever my standard raise is here. You know, cash game, that's weird, 50 cents, so probably... $2 is probably my normal raise in this thing, maybe.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
All right, so our hero raises to four big blinds, so that's exactly $2, right?
There you go.
We have to get used to these big blinds in the thing, right? Big blind calls and the button calls.
Yay!
So scare everybody away, but we build a pot, and I'm fine with that. He says, sure enough, the button limps. He says, I 3-bet to four big blinds, big blind button calls. Should I have raised more? I always raise 3 big blinds plus 1 for each limper. Any hand, any position. Should I alter this? No, I like the fact that you are consistent with your betting.
Yep, I agree.
Tournaments might be a little bit different, but cash games, that seems fine. Might be a little bit more. But no, I mean, that's what I said. That was my bet, right?
So, yeah.
All right. All right, going to the flop with 12 big blinds in there. 3 players, remember. And the flop is the deuce of clubs, 8 of clubs, king of spades.
Nice.
Pretty good flop for us, right?
Yeah. This is interesting because even if somebody had a club draw, we have backdoor clubs. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We're not even afraid of that.
Well, maybe a little bit afraid.
Well, a little bit, but it'd have to get there on the turn first. So if it gets there on the turn, we have outs. If it doesn't, then we put the hammer down on the turn. So
right, exactly.
Now, I've played it differently. I didn't take control of the hand. I limped, so...
I think either way you can bet here.
You could probably bet here either way.
Because here's the problem. I don't think you want to limp this. I mean, I don't think you want to check this, right?
I don't know. You've hit it so hard that you want to get value with this hand. If you bet now and they fold, you got a set of kings that you didn't get anything out of.
If you check here and the club comes and you don't hit that river club that you're hoping for, or boat up, then you've just lost value. Right?
Wow, so that, we have so many outs, though. You have another king, you have any club, probably, and you have any 4-8 and whatever the turn card was for a boat. I mean, a 2-8 and a boat. So, I mean, to me, that's... I don't know. I think I'm willing to take that risk.
Hmm.
I might check and maybe even check raise or something, but I don't know.
If you raised like our hero did, then you're definitely going to bet here, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna probably put a little bit out. I'm not going to go crazy. I'm going to bet half to two-thirds, I guess.
But I like this. I like when I hit like this, because now when I bet, people look at, oh, that's a continuation bet, and they might try to raise you, and I'm happy. Raise me all day long here.
Yeah.
But you're right. If we checked, it might be a little bit more of a decision. But betting, you have to bet here.
Yeah. So if we bet, we're just going to bet half to two-thirds of the pot.
Yeah, my half. Yeah, six, probably. Yep. All right. So here it says, obviously, I'm loving this flop. So I put in a 75% bet and 9 big blinds. This is pretty much my standard flop bet to make any flush draws pay. Surprisingly, the big blind calls, and unsurprisingly, the button folds. So our head's up now. It doesn't change anything because we're out of position anyhow. But.
Well, that's a pretty big bet. Three quarters of the pot on a flop? That's
the biggest bet I would make there.
Yeah, that's like the max range of a bet to me. If you do that all the time, it gets back to your raising pre-flop rules with Jonathan Little, where you're trying to save some money and get the same effect, you know?
Right, yeah.
I mean, 75 is still, it's three quarters of the pot. It's a little more than two-thirds. But
I think three-fourths is a pretty hard rule for betting flops going forward.
You think?
I think, isn't it? I mean, as a standard rule, I mean, two-thirds I can get behind, half I can get behind. I think less than that is probably weaker, but three-fourths, that's a lot.
That is a lot. I think it's too much. I think it does.
For standard. I mean, it depends. I mean, here, obviously he's right. You want to keep it consistent so people don't know, although we're talking at a snap table here, so...
That's true too.
Paying attention anyhow, right? Because you don't know who you are. So there's probably no reason to stay standard in this game. Probably, yeah, you're playing probably suboptimally here by trying to keep things standard, right?
Yeah.
Should we just play the odds of what you have and try to get as much out of it? So I would say if that's the case, this is too big of a bet for their hand to strung.
It feels like a lot. I mean, it's
half size bet seems perfect.
I know when you're playing pot limit Omaha, people bet pot all the time. That's 100%. But there's a different nuance of that game, and to me, 75% no limit hold'em, especially in a snap, it's just a little too much.
Yeah,
that, I would have done that a little differently. I would have probably bet 7 big blinds.
But you know, really, what we wanted to do is to get heads up. We didn't want two people drawing at us, right?
So, yeah, yeah,
it worked, and he got more money out of this guy than we did, right? And we know we're ahead right now, so
okay.
All right, the turn is the 4 of clubs. So the board is deuce of clubs, 8 of clubs, king of spades, 4 of clubs. Of course, we knew that flush would get there, right? And our pot is 30 big blinds.
All right. Well, I'm just not going to be afraid of the flush. I'm just not. I mean...
And you're right, because not only do we have our quad and boat outs, but we also have the flush out as
well. Right. Unless the guy has an ace of clubs in his hand, it's the only out we're losing to for the clubs. So to me, I just feel like I don't care. I have to bet. I'm going to bet half the pot. Roughly.
So about 15, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I would do, and that's exactly what our hero did.
Nice.
He says, "Oh, good. The flush I was worried about gets there. Nonetheless, I do my normal turn bet of 50%, still showing strength, and will consider folding to a big re-raise." I guess I can consider folding a big re-raise, but I'm expecting a raise to come here. Aren't you?
I think so. I think it felt like this player didn't believe us, maybe, and... If he's going to play the hand any further, he's going to have to either already have the flush, have a club in his hand, or be bluffing and just trying to steal it with a float. So, to me, I have outs to all those things, and one of them I don't even need outs. So, if he raises, I've got no problem with that. But I'm not going to check either.
Right.
You know, I want to get value for this.
The check is the worst here, because I was thinking about that, because I was thinking maybe it's the same thing. If you expected him to raise... Then why not just check, and then you're calling a smaller amount if he has you beat. But I think betting out now, which is what we did and what we should do, I don't see it. It makes it harder for the guy to bet his flush there, right? Wouldn't he want to walk the dog one more street?
Maybe. Unless he's got a baby flush. Baby flush, he's worried. Because why is this guy betting with three clubs on the board? He must have a high club in his hand.
A runner flush is hard to hit, right? So I'm feeling pretty confident with any of my flush cards there that, you know, I'm just going to call here. And then, because then some people are going to go, oh, he didn't raise me in the turn. He must not have the flush. He must be having someone else, right? And then bet out again on the river, and then bam, I'll hit him there.
Well, you can't say...
Sure, I'm going to raise here.
You can't say runner flush is hard to hit when the third club is already on the board. We're not going back to the flop and wondering about that now. It's just how hard is it to hit one club now?
That's true. That's true.
You have to remember it like that. So if I have a baby flush, let's say I was getting out of hand and I played 7-9 of clubs and called the raise and whatever. If I had 7-9 of clubs, I might consider just calling that flop and not re-raising because it's only a 9-high flush. Then when it gets there, I'm going to want to protect that 9-high flush. So I'm going to raise, I think. So I can't really say that backdoor club is in my hand.
Heads up, I'm a little bit more inclined to chance it a little bit.
Well, this guy is clearly showing strength against us if I'm now the villain.
Let's rephrase it. So I guess my ultimate point was that if we check, it's more likely that somebody's going to try to steal this pot from us than if we bet and raise us off of it.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, probably.
So if that's the case, then we need to bet because now it takes less likely that he's going to bet us off his hand.
Right.
It's going to take more money from him. It's going to take a bigger deal for him.
It eliminates the float is what
it
does.
Exactly, right?
Okay.
I guess that's what I was getting at.
So right, okay.
Whether he has it or not, I think he's less likely to raise.
Right.
If we bet. And obviously, if we bet, we get more value out of it if he doesn't have it, right?
So, right.
All right, cool. All right, so our hero does bet half the pot, 15 big blinds, and the big blind raises to 45 big blinds. So pretty significant bet. Triples our bet.
I'll call. I'm not going to – I mean, I would consider shoving a little bit if I didn't believe this guy. But I like the size of this pot's already big enough that I'd be happy with just check calling. And if he shoves, I don't think I'm going to fold three kings anyway. I just don't believe this guy has the flush.
Right. So here's the thing. If that's the case, and I agree with you, it makes no sense to shove here, right?
I don't think so.
Because if this guy is bluffing, if he shoves, he's done. He's out of hand, right?
Right.
So if we call and check the river, he might take another stab at it, right?
Right.
So we'll get more money out of him. If we shove right here and he has nothing, then he's gone. And he has the flush that he's going to call, and now we're going to have to hit. I there's no upside to raising here, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to call.
All right. Here says, I probably shouldn't, but I call the re-raise. Was this wrong? Nope.
No, I don't think so.
I'm worried about the flush, and he is representing the flush. I have no information on him. Obviously, I'm hoping to pair the board, but in reality, I'm probably pot committed if I call. It's probably true. It's probably not a big deal.
Right.
All right, the river is the 10 of hearts, so our final board is deuce of clubs, 8 of clubs, king of spades, 4 of clubs, 10 of hearts, so it doesn't help us. And now we probably check, right?
Yeah, let's just follow through with our plan. You know, the pot's big enough. I'm more confident now that I'm ahead than ever before, so, you know, that extra club would have helped, but to me, you know, I just don't see this guy having the flush already because... It just doesn't feel, the way he played doesn't feel like it, especially at this level. So I'll check and let him try to bluff off some chips to me, and then I'll call.
Okay. So we check, and the big blind bets, shoves for 103 big blinds, though we only have 46 big blinds left.
Yeah, I have to call. There's enough money out there that I have to call. When he raised to 45 big blinds and we called, that's 90 big blinds.
And that's a ridiculous bet too, right?
Yeah, why wouldn't he just want a value bet if he's got a flush? No. Right.
Exactly.
So yeah. there's no reason to shove.
The only way I can win is betting, right?
Yeah, there's no reason to shove here unless you're bluffing.
All right, so we do make the call, and the big blind shows the ace of spades, 8 of hearts.
Yeah, that was a desperation shove right there.
But it makes sense the way it all worked out, right?
So he's literally floating, right?
He made the mistake of raising that turn, I think.
Yeah. He's floating there and then decides, you know what, it didn't work out. He bet into me, so now I'm going to try to force him off his hand and make him think I have this hand. But when we call, he's got to know we're not going to...
The jig is up, right?
The jig is up. Unless he's convinced we have only, like, ace-king, with the king of clubs or ace of clubs in our hand. And then he's thinking that we're only calling to try to hit our flush. And then when it missed, we got a bet to win. But those eights, you know what I mean? That's not going to win for him. So it had to be just a straight bluff that was horrible. Just check behind, take your lumps, and hope your eights are good. Hope he had like ace queen with the ace of clubs in his hand or something.
Right.
And take it down.
Terrible play on that. Nice pot there.
Yeah.
Our friend from over the pond. He says, obviously, unlike most of the hand of the weeks, there is a happy ending here, but I can't help thinking that not being results in the end, I should have folded there. Is that true? Absolutely not. Played correctly.
Yeah, I would not have folded there.
Yep.
Especially
with also
money.
With my normal 15-30 room with no notes player, I would have folded and lived to fight another day, but playing in a bigger room with bigger stakes, I know that's all relative, made me take more risk for some reason. It's actually kind of counterintuitive, but
yeah.
He says, which is my bigger leak, folding in the same situation in the 30-cent room or calling in the 50-cent room?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just, there's always the right play. It doesn't matter what size the room is.
I mean, every hand's different too. I think this hand, is just the way our opponent played it was terrible and gave us a lot of confidence that we were ahead.
Yeah. I you know what, too? In the spur of the moment, I may have even shoved on that turn. When he raised me to 45, I might have just shoved there and said, screw it, I'll take the odds.
That's the beauty of us having time to think about it.
Yeah.
You stop and think, no, there's no good thing that could happen to shoving there.
Right.
But in the moment, absolutely.
And now that we didn't shove, we get all of his money instead. Because if we shoved there, he folds.
Oh, absolutely.
And then we get no money. So it worked out the best way to play. So I don't think he made a mistake at this hand. Just some lessons to be learned. Yeah. All right, so don't forget, we're on the ship next week. So after that, we'll bring back O'Malley. And hopefully we'll survive our cruise. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.